You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We'll leave it in. That's funny.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a podcast about all things edible, spreadable, and pourable, with me, your host, Colin Farrell.
And me, the leprechaun from Lucky Charms.
Ooh, do you like Lucky Charms as a cereal? Where does it fall in your cereal roster?
I liked it when I was a cereal eater. I don't eat it anymore. It's very sweet.
Yeah, that's what I find about all kind of nostalgic kid food that, like, I have, like, a soft spot for, and then maybe we'll retry. And I find it that it just tastes extremely cloyingly sweet usually.
Yeah, Lucky Charms are, like, it's also the non-marshmallow pieces are frosted and there's marshmallows in it. So it's, like, a lot. But I do like Cheerios still.
Cheerios are great. And, like, Honey Nut Cheerios are great. And I'll tell you another cereal that I think still stands the test of time that I've had in the past couple of years. Cinnamon Toast Crunch, folks. Delicious.
That's not for me. I don't know.
Too much plain sugar just all over it.
That also reminds me, I just had a dream about someone. They were like, oh, and I got you this Captain Crunch Oops All Berries cereal, which I do like.
You do?
Yeah. It's like Captain Crunch, but there's no Captain Crunch in it. It's just all the berry-flavored balls.
Oh, interesting. So on that tip, I had COVID, folks. Big reveal.
I thought you weren't going to reveal that.
First time, long-time listener, first-time haver of COVID. It's not all it's cracked up to be, honestly. I didn't really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, you didn't have a good time?
I didn't like it. And, like, it did fuck up my taste a little bit. I didn't, like, lose my taste, but it made my taste strange. It made everything taste a bit bitter for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's happened to a couple people I know where, like, one of my coworkers, like, just couldn't really stand the taste of wine for several
months. That's exactly what happened to me. Yeah. Wine. It's the only thing. Red wine tastes absolutely terrible. And now everything else tastes normal again, but wine. But yeah. I went to the coffee shop the other day to get a cup of Java. And I said, hey, give me that Java that I like.
You went down to the Java Hut?
Yeah, I went down to Java the Hut and I got a cup of Joe Biden. And it smelled like berries to me. Like it smelled and tasted like berry, like Captain Crunch berry cereal or like Fruity Pebbles. And I put milk and sugar in my coffee, so it really tasted disgusting, honestly. It tasted like I had poured banana milk into my coffee or something.
That sounds good.
I was repulsed by it, though, because it also kind of tasted like garbage to me. And I was like, oh, great. This is the thing everyone talks about with COVID, when you, like, taste stuff and it's strange. It's not like it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But my coworker at Zaza also works at this coffee shop. So when I got into work, I was like, Zach, can you like smell this coffee for me? I'm having a COVID experience, right? This is like, doesn't smell like berries. And they're like, oh no, it's like a weird experimental coffee that they're brewing that tastes like blueberries.
And what?
I was relieved that it wasn't me. But then I was like, this is very rude. Like, don't use experimental coffee for like the standard drip coffee. Do you know?
Yeah, that's wild. Blueberries?
It's not.
But I like blueberries, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. And if you were like, if someone was like, hey, we have this like interesting coffee. It has extremely like berry flavor to it. Would you like to try a bit of it? Or doing a special brew? As the cup of coffee that like people are just grabbing for maintenance. And then all of a sudden, and they're like.
Grabbing for maintenance.
Yeah, everyone's like. The baristas are like, oh, yeah, like, everyone keeps sending it back saying they think the milk is rotten and tastes bad. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a good plan, folks. You know?
Oh, my God. That's gross, though, that it tastes like garbage.
It tasted like garbage.
Like hot, I'm like, smelly garbage.
Yeah, like you don't want to just like surprise people with a very strange fringed coffee for the by the glass drip. You know what I mean?
By the glass. You're by the glass coffee.
I was like, people are square in this neighborhood. You know what I mean? I'm they like sure the least are. Square person in my neighborhood. And I also was like offended by this coffee. It might as well have been like lasagna flavored. It's not appropriate. Do you know?
Not appropriate.
It's inappropriate. Imagine what Ben Affleck would have said about something like this.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's funny that you mentioned Ben Affleck because him and Dale are about to get divorced, apparently.
Whoa, that's sick.
Okay, so according to GOTV, Ben Affleck has been finding comfort in Jennifer Garner's company after his public feud with J-Lo.
Okay, what was the public feud? Was it at the Grammys when he was like, yeah, I'm bored and I had a weird face transplant?
The seat filler sitting next to them says that Jennifer Lopez told him he was becoming a meme at the Grammys.
And how right she was, am I right?
He was already a meme before that, though. The picture of him smoking outside with a cigarette looking sad, that's been a meme for thousands of years.
Yeah, or like collecting all that those packages while like a coffee is also spilling a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. This guy was like born a meme.
The Music Times says Ben Affleck is divorcing Jennifer Lopez after making him a laughingstock.
She started the meme.
Yes. And then apparently they had another argument 3 weeks ago about alcohol at a movie premiere. And then this article is called Ben Affleck and the Sacrifices He Has to Make to Keep Jennifer Lopez Happy. Hmm. According to this, it's just the normal things that you would have to do to make J-Lo happy. You have to keep her to be calm.
Keep her calm. Keep her sedated at all times. Steady drip of benzos.
Yeah, because if he doesn't keep her calm, Lopez will demonstrate why she is called the diva of the Bronx. So, yeah.
Wow. This is borderline racist reporting, honestly.
Yes. Well, definitely sexist.
Sure.
Possibly racist.
Racist curious. Wow. How wild. So what does he have to do to keep her calm?
He had to do all of the moving himself when he moved into her house.
Don't you think movers did that?
Yeah, obviously Ben Affleck was not picking up his own boxes.
Yeah, he like put boxes together and like shoved them in the back of his
he
Subaru.
Went to the Home Depot and got a bunch of boxes and then assembled them.
He's like, this large Tupperware thing will be great for my sweaters.
You know, it was not in those moving supplies is that cut out of Ana de Armas, his ex-girlfriend.
He's like, do you have a 5'6" box that I could put this in?
Yeah. Also, Ben Affleck was already a laughingstock because of his back tattoo, right? So, like, I don't understand. Yes. He's used to it by now. He's not going to divorce J-Lo, the diva of the Bronx, just because he's a laughingstock.
His face looks so different. He's gotten some work done, or, like, he looks like he's wearing a Ben Affleck mask.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't his usual self during the Grammys date night, apparently, according to Entertainment Tonight.
Wow. And what's his usual self? Just like unwieldy Boston guy smoking and picking fights, talking about the Sox.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'm glad they're getting divorced. That means he'll be back on the market. And
yeah. I also think that'll be fun because this is getting a little bit boring, you know? Like, so if they don't get divorced or, you know, have an affair or something soon. Also, they got that matching infinity tattoo, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw an amazing infinity tattoo on the internet that was soup, salad, and breadsticks, the words in the shape of an infinity tattoo.
Who is this hero who got this soup, salad, and breadsticks tattoo? Unlimited. That's the smartest, funniest thing I've probably ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, God bless the internet. What would we do without it?
Wow, that's really funny. I've been taking a lot of pleasure and joy recently in funny animal videos, which I've historically always loved. I've always been a fan of a funny animal video ever since, you know, really the internet was invented, ever since the first cat I saw fall through a Christmas tree and get electrocuted. But I'm loving it. And now Instagram, the algorithm really knows me, you know, it really gets to know you. And so it just offers me up a plethora of funny animal videos. And it's really the only thing that's like getting me through my life.
Yeah, I really liked the one that you posted where the cat jumped over the balcony and dropped like 3,000 feet to the ground. And everyone's like, oh my God. And it's like, I'm fine.
It's like, this is what I do. I love that one. I loved the donkey that got its like front paws stuck in like the fence and just completely flipped over and fell on its back.
Didn't see that one.
Oh my God, it was so funny. Donkeys make the funniest noises. They really do go hee-haw.
Do they?
Yeah, they go ee-ah, ee-ah.
I wonder like why.
Like the Christmas donkey in the song.
Do giraffes make noises?
Unclear. Never heard a giraffe's noise, but their necks are too long, right? What's with that?
Yeah, I don't, like I said, they're like a cross between a horse and a dinosaur.
Oh, right. Like, we were talking about this last week.
Piranosaurus. Did we say that out loud? I don't know. Probably.
No, I think we were just texting about it. Okay. But like, it just really prompted me to really think about how wacky animals are. They're so different. I mean, think about a mouse and like a giraffe. Like, they're both animals, but they're so different.
They really are not very similar, no.
It's so fun that there's so many kinds of animals, isn't it? A hippo?
Yeah, hippos are dangerous, though. They'll eat you or stomp on you. Yeah,
like a toucan.
Yeah, like what is the point of a toucan?
I don't know. Besides Fruit Loops. Are listening.
What? Oh, yeah. Sorry, we're back to anti-bird propaganda.
That's true. Toucans are erasure. Toucan erasure. Mike Sala, I bet you know something, a thing or two about toucans. A thing or toucan.
Oh, nice.
I know a thing or toucan about toucans. Toucans are funny, huh? That's a funny word, toucan.
Yeah. You know, giraffes are the largest, tallest living terrestrial animal. And the largest ruminant on Earth.
What's a ruminant? Like a horse?
I don't know. Let's see. A ruminant is a hooved herbivorous animal or browsing mammals. A browsing mammal.
We're a browsing mammal. So a mammal that is not really looking to purchase. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just looking.
Killing some time.
I'm waiting for my friend. I'm just looking. Wow, that's amazing. So, okay, so that's a, like, we're talking horse, donkey, elk, gazelle, miniature horse, pony.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because you have to have a hoof. A goat.
Oh, goat is the same. Interesting. Sheep.
Sheep, goat. I mean, goats are obviously tools of the devil, but whatever.
That's true. They're evil. That's a weird animal with, like, a very sinister motivation in its heart.
There's only 97,000 giraffes on Earth. Doesn't seem like that many.
To me, that seems like a ton. Where are they all? You'd think you would have seen one walking down the street if there are that many.
Well, as of 2010, which was just last year, 1,600 of them were in zoos. I'm sure that many of those are no longer alive. I don't know how long giraffes live.
Hopefully not very long.
So, okay, in 2016, there were 97,500 members of Giraffa in the wild.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, their species. Yeah. I just feel like, shouldn't there be, like, a million giraffes?
Well, we looked up the other day at work how many chickens are in the world, and it's like 5 billion or something like that.
How do they even know how many chickens there are? There's no way to count them. There's some chickens.
The census.
That my neighbor.
The chicken census, obviously. Hello. Hello. Is there a chicken here? How many chickens live here? 5? Right. Okay, great.
How many horses are there in the world?
Let's check it out. I'm going to say 3 million.
Okay. No more. Podcast is canceled. We're just going to Google how many animals there are. Oh, my God. You were way off.
Really? High or low?
There's fucking 60 million horses.
60 million horses? That is scary to me. That seems like too many, right? That's like a horse for every two people or something.
Oh man, there's 400 breeds. So they're including every horse. Hold on, let's get an update for 2022.
That includes mini horse, which is could live in your house. That's cute. I kind of want to get mini horse.
Let's see. Yeah, 60 million horses. That includes wild horses too.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. A horse. Oh my God, that's crazy. I love horses. I do like them a lot.
Remember when I got bit by a horse?
Do I remember? No. When did that happen?
I don't know. Like last summer, I was feeding a horse inappropriately and he bit my finger. You're supposed to have your palm flat.
Flat, yeah.
Because they're not like, they can't tell the difference between your fingers and carrots. And so I had put my hand in his mouth and he was like, thank you for this carrot, but it was my hand, my finger.
Oh my God, where were you?
My friend lives on the south side and she lives right next door to like a place that has two horses. One of the 60 million horses in the world.
Oh, I love horse. And I like when someone asks if I want a snack, like, hey, do you want some of this trail mix? I go, okay, but I'm going to eat it out of your hand like a horse. And then I do this.
That is gross. No, it's cute. If you did that to me, I would run away.
It's cute. And you feel like the nose and stuff. Oh, it's very cute. Anyway, should we get into the topic for today?
Well, hold on. Which state do you think has the most horses? Really quick.
Montana. Before?
It looks like...
California?
Hold on.
Texas.
Wow, there's quite a few in West Virginia. Oh. So, Mississippi... Or no. Okay, Montana has... No. Nebraska, Idaho, Maryland, Oregon.
Maryland?
Arizona.
What?
Okay, actually, Texas has the most. They have almost 1 million horses.
That's what I just said. I said Texas. That was like my third guess. I said Montana, California, California, and Texas.
California is number 2.
Okay, so I'm extremely smart. That's all.
Yeah, what this proves. You are good at guessing how many horses could fit in a place based on the size of that place.
That's true. California. I think Rhode Island, imagine. Rhode Island has like 2 million horses.
All there's horses, no room for any people. I'm just like, horses just everywhere. They're getting on the subway.
The famous Rhode Island horse subway system.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get to our topic, which is horses.
It's horse meat.
Just kidding. We're doing cheese.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm into cheese.
I love cheese. It's good.
I decided to do my research on macaroni and cheese.
Sick.
Because I figured there'll be some fun history behind there. And there is some history, but it's not that fun.
Really? Is it evil?
It's kind of depressing. Okay. Also, I found out that people in the United Kingdom call it macaroni cheese, not macaroni and cheese.
Wow.
Just like saving themselves a syllable, I guess.
Yeah. That is time saving.
So, yeah, macaroni and cheese was probably invented by those wild and crazy Romans, but the first ever recorded recipe for it was in the 14th century Italian cookbook, which I think is really funny that they had cookbooks in the 14th century.
I know, they were just made of, like, sheepskin.
They're like, I live for 20 years only, and I want to write this cookbook.
Made of, like, stone tablets.
So, yeah, it was just a simple Parmesan and pasta dish. They were like, this is great. Everyone was like, great, we love this. The first modern recipe, I got this also from Wikipedia and Smithsonian Magazine. Mm. The first modern recipe, according to Wikipedia, it was in 1769. I don't know what modern means to them, but that doesn't seem that modern to me. A person living in the year 2023. But I don't know when the article is written. The first recipe was in 1769, the modern recipe. Elizabeth Raffald, the experienced English housekeeper, and the recipe was basically a Mornay sauce with macaroni sprinkled with Parmesan and baked. So like the original macaroni recipes were the casserole type, you know?
Right, right.
Then Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management a couple years later says that you should serve macaroni with the cheese course.
Oh.
Which I think
like
is
after
funny.
Dinner? Like dessert?
Like macaroni and cheese.
How interesting. I mean, I think that's kind of cool. Why not? You get to eat macaroni and cheese after dinner. That's sick.
Yeah, totally. You have like a full like bolognese pasta and then you have macaroni and cheese.
I love that. That's fun.
Yeah. Or you have like a pot roast and then macaroni and cheese. Now I want macaroni and cheese. Okay.
I love it. It's good.
Oh yeah, it's good. Okay, so Thomas Jefferson, I don't know if you heard of him. He was a president of the United States of America. And famous slave banger.
APAB.
famous slave haver and banger. He's sort of credited with bringing, popularizing macaroni and cheese in the United States of America. So he and his slave, James Hemings, went to Paris. And James Hemings is also, it should be noted, the half-brother of Thomas Jefferson's wife, because Thomas Jefferson's wife's dad had sex with a slave and had 6 kids with her. And then one of those kids, James Hemings, became the property of Thomas Jefferson when he married Martha.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Cool guy.
Yeah, definitely cool.
Take that, all you Hamilton fans.
Yeah. That's so,
super cool people.
They, you know, Hemings knew how to read and write, and also he was an accomplished chef. So part of the reason why Thomas Jefferson brought him to France is because he wanted to train him as a French chef so that he wouldn't have to pay an actual French chef in his house. He'd just have this free slave do all the work for him.
Great.
Because apparently French chefs were pretty expensive back then and today. So they had macaroni and cheese in Paris, and they were like, OMG, we freaking love this shit. We're going to bring the recipe back to the U.S. He commissioned the U.S. ambassador to France to buy a macaroni making machine.
Oh, my God.
But then apparently it didn't work very well because Jefferson just started importing macaroni and Parmesan from France in huge quantities. Also, when James Hemings went to France with Thomas Jefferson to learn how to be a chef, he, by French law, was free. Even though, like, if you go to France and you own a slave, the slave is not your property in France at that time. But rather than stick around in France and be free, he went back to the United States with Thomas Jefferson because his whole family lived there, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he eventually became the chef de cuisine at the Jefferson House in Monticello, and he had a bunch of people underneath him, including white people, because he was the head of the whole kitchen. Mm-hmm. And eventually, he was able to negotiate his freedom with Jefferson by saying, like, I'll train some new chef, and he will be your slave chef, and I will be free. Wow. And Thomas Jefferson was like, okay, that's fine. But then he committed suicide. So it's really surprising. Aww,
that's a very sad story.
I know. It's very sad. So, yeah. But so, like I said, Jefferson started importing huge quantities of macaroni and cheese and Parmesan. His last grocery order placed right before he died was for 112 pounds of macaroni.
Oh, my God. Jeez Louise. No wonder he died. He died of a macaroni overdose.
Well, that's what Smithsonian Magazine said. Well, you know what? Despite the fact that he loved macaroni and cheese so much, he actually didn't die of a heart attack. He died of a butt infection. He had like some
a nasty butt infection?
Yeah, he had like a nasty butt infection that basically gave him sepsis and he died.
An NBI, a nasty butt infection? Wow. <Yeah. clears throat> Well, karma's a bitch, TJ. That's right. What song is that though? Like da na 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 na. Put a feather in his hat and called it macaroni.
Yeah,
that's who's the star of that song?
Yankee Doodle.
Yankee Doodle.
Yeah.
Were they friends, Yankee Doodle? And
I don't know. I don't know that much about Yankee Doodle. Was he even a real person? Was his last name really Doodle? Was his first name really Yankee?
Yankee Doodle. Imagine you have a child. You're like, oh, he's so cute. What should we name him? How about Yankee Doodle?
This is our newborn son, Yankee.
Yankee Doodle. Yankee Doodle is I have a feeling that like Yankee Doodle, if he was real, could be very like you know, problematic. So I don't want to jump the gun on this. However, Yankee Doodle could be a very funny name for a dog or a cat.
Yeah. Well, so apparently, I don't think Yankee Doodle was a real guy, but they called it macaroni. Means it's referring to like the powdered wigs that people would wear at the time. So it was called a macaroni wig. And I'm going to show you a picture of it, but unfortunately our listener won't be able to see this.
Oh, yeah, that does look like mac. What a hairdo. What an insane hairdo.
We can link to that in the show notes, you guys.
Okay, yeah, we'll link to that crazy fucking hairdo. That's wacky, that hairdo.
Yeah, I know. Yankee Doodle is apparently very into it.
Wow, Yankee Doodle looks nuts. But, like, you know the thing about those hairdos and clothing that is so funny to me? That, like, you know, when people have, like, wacky hairdos and clothing today, they're like, yeah, I'm being wacky, and that's cool. And that is cool. That's great. But, like, they did this so unironically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone is just like, this is how we look.
They're just, like, so serious about it. Like, bro, you look like fucking divine in hairspray, you know?
Yeah, but, like, they probably also were, like, balding and had, like, scabies and stuff. They're, like, so gross and dirty back then. They had to have wigs on.
Yeah, and, like, a nasty butt infection.
Yeah, you could get a butt infection at any moment, and it will kill you.
A deadly butt infection. Little known fact, folks, about your...
I did not know that Jefferson died of a butt infection. I just found this up.
Taft got stuck in a bathtub. Jefferson died of an infected booty.
So, yeah, in 1802, before Jefferson died of his butt infection, he served a pie called macaroni at a state dinner. Wow. And the Reverend Manasseh Cutler was like, I fucking hate this.
Oh, wow.
God would not like this. But he was the only one who didn't like it. The rest of America quickly became huge fans. However, it was still kind of like the food of the rich, you know, because it was like imported and whatever. Mm-hmm. But eventually it became cheaper and more like the food of the people. So then rich people were like, we hate it. There is a macaroni and cheese recipe called macaroni and cheese in the cookbook called The Virginia Housewife, which is the most influential cookbook of the 19th century, which I was like, I feel like I've heard of this before when I was writing this. So yeah, The Virginia Housewife, I feel like we've talked about it before for other reasons. But yeah, the most influential cookbook of all time, well, of the 19th century, had macaroni and cheese in it. And at that point, you know, the Virginia housewife was a normal person. She was a lay person. So, you know, rich people were like, we're definitely not going to eat that shit anymore. In 1851.
Causes butt infections.
Yeah. In 1851, the first cheese factory was built in the United States of America. Mm. Prior to that, all of your cheese would be made on the farm, usually by the farm wife. Mm. Phrase listed by Wikipedia or Smithsonian Magazine.
Wow.
The farm wife, or if you had a super prosperous farm, you would have a cheese maid doing your cheese making for you, sometimes a slave person. According to Smithsonian Magazine, industrialization means food goes from being made by women to being made by men. So true. And that's what happened with cheese. Most of the factories were just men working there, making all the cheese.
Rude.
Processed cheese was invented over 100 years ago. Smithsonian Magazine refused to actually list a date, so I can't do math, and the article was written in 2017, so I don't know what 100 years ago was. It was like over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But you get, yeah, they made it, and it's, as you probably are aware, emulsified, cooked, and therefore no longer a living food, which means it doesn't alter on the shelf during age, doesn't change flavor. It's shelf stable. Velveeta was invented in 1918, a dairy-based product with 22 ingredients that no longer is regulated as cheese. I feel like Smithsonian's talking a little bit of shit right now.
Yeah, they're throwing a shade at Velveeta. I was going to do the Velveeta story myself, but then it was, like, not that interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's good because it was shelf-stable. You could send it over to the soldiers. It was good for weathering gluts in the cheese market. So if there was like too much cheese to sell, it wouldn't go bad.
Yeah.
It's also good for getting nutrients to people that don't have refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was technically invented in Switzerland, we call it American cheese because we love processed cheese so much. We want it to be the national cheese of America, which is fine with me. I like it.
I like it too. Yeah.
And according to Smithsonian Magazine, many Americans have never had macaroni and cheese made with real cheese. And I question that. Although when I was growing up, we mostly did the box stuff. But when we go to like potlucks, there would be like the casserole kind with real cheese in there.
Yeah.
But
totally. I love Kraft macaroni and cheese when I was growing up. And actually, like, there's this company, Anthony's, that makes this delicious cheap powdered cheddar. Mm-hmm. And it's like organic and it's made yellow with like amaranth. And it's very good. And I use it all the time when I make I always put it in my macaroni and cheese. It's so good.
And you put it on popcorn too.
Yeah, popcorn. It's really good on, honestly, like good on and like French fries or fried chicken. It's very good.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my story of macaroni and cheese. Not that interesting, but you did get to have a little laugh about the butt infection.
The butt infection was really the highlight of this entire story. Okay, great. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with something I have to say about cheese.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So, folks, I was inspired by Baldor, the criminal organization / food distributor, for the crime against cheese that they've been committing by charging $20 American a pound for regular provolone cheese, which I've mentioned, I think, a few times on the show because I'm so annoyed by it. So I decided to speak today about cheese and crime, which is extremely prevalent, folks.
Really?
Cheese, oh yeah, I had no idea, but apparently cheese is like the most stolen food in the entire world.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I got my information today from The Atlantic, an article by Boree Lam, Smithsonian Mag, Vice Munchies, and an article in Culture Cheese Magazine by Sam Jones. So.
Clever name.
Very, very, very clever. So after 2 years of robbing Italian warehouses blind, police have finally caught up to a group behind a massive series of cheese thefts. This is in Italy. So these people are in Modena. A gang of, quote, gourmands are being charged with the theft of 2,039 wheels of Parmigiano Reggiano. That's worth $875,000.
Dang, that's almost how many horses there are in Texas.
I know, that's so many. So, like, over the span of, like, 2 years, these people stole that many wheels of Parmigiano.
That's wild. What were they doing? Just, like, reselling it?
I guess they're, like, reselling it. Parmigiano, as we all know, is extremely expensive. And in Italy, it's so expensive that some Italian banks will accept it as a loan collateral.
Fascinating.
I know. So you'd be like, I don't have no money, but I do have a 5 wheels of Parmigiano in my stable. And then they get stolen by these cheesy bandits.
Why would they be in your stable?
I don't know. That's where I picture them living, outside with the goats. So anyway, this was like 11 people. They stole all of this in 2 years. And then this article goes on to say, quote, the cheese heists don't stop in Italy. In 2013, a man accused of stealing 21 tons of Wisconsin cheese worth about $200,000 was arrested while on the run in New Jersey. And earlier this year, this article was written in 2016, a tractor trailer transporting $85,000 worth of shredded mozzarella was stolen en route to distribution center in Florida and never recovered.
Is shredded mozzarella worth a lot of money? Because I feel like it's not.
I don't think so either, but I guess it was just like so much. And I'm like, where did these people put all this cheese?
You can freeze it.
You can freeze cheese. That's true.
Yeah.
But you better have like another tractor trailer. I guess they stole the whole tractor trailer. I don't know. It seems really wild. And I'm very surprised to know some of this information about cheese in general and how much it's stolen. Yeah. I guess they say that 4% of all cheese is stolen.
4% of all cheese is involved in a caper.
Exactly. Not the salty kind. The criminal kind. And then I read that each year, $10 billion worth of cheese is stolen.
$10 billion?
Billion with a B.
That's way more horses than there are in the world.
I know. It's way more than – that's chicken level. That's a
– Yeah, that is chicken level.
It's $1 of cheese money for each chicken. But anyway, isn't that, like, extremely wild?
Well, don't they think that maybe they should reconsider how much cheese costs if everyone's stealing it all the time? Like, shouldn't they be like, you know what? Maybe we are charging a little bit too much.
Too much for cheese. This. And people – this is, like, including – the like petty theft of cheese, you know, that we should all be committing, like taking cheese from Whole Foods, like a chunk of cheese or some whatever.
Absolutely, yes.
Everyone should be stealing cheese from Whole Foods. You heard it here first, folks.
And samosas.
And everything. Oh my God. My friend at work said that he went to Whole Foods a couple weeks ago and got like a big, you know, box of salad or whatever. Now, granted, he obviously made it so big. I'm like, why would you make it so, like, 2 pounds? But he went up to pay for it, and it was $41.
Yeah, that happens all the time when I used to work at Whole Foods. Because also, those samosas, if you put one in there, that weighs 30 pounds. So
right.
You're going to be paying millions of dollars.
So he was like, I'm sorry, but I can't afford that. Like, I'm not going to spend $41 on a salad. So he just like, he's like, I don't want to waste it, but I can't afford that.
Yeah, duh. So it probably, they're used to it. They're like, no problem. Also, when cherries would get in season, people would bring them up and they'd be like, $7,000 for cherries. And I'm like, yes, they're like $4 million a pound. Seven. And they'd be like, we're not taking these. And I'm like, add them to the other pile of cherries next to me where everyone just ditches them when they get to the checkout.
That's hilarious. Okay, so in Russia, I guess like they weren't allowed to like import anything. So there's like a lot of cheese smuggling going on in Russia. The state of cheese in Russia has gotten a lot of tension this year, with the Russian government trying to bust black market cheese dealers in bodegas and online. I didn't know there was bodegas in Russia. Earlier this month, on the first anniversary of the ban of Western food products, the government aired footage of a national television of a bulldozer destroying illegally imported cheeses. Vladimir Putin also ordered foreign ham and fruits to be burned amid the criticism that the illegal foods could have been donated to those living in poverty. The counter-sanctions were a retaliation to Western sanctions over the annexation of Crimea and Ukraine.
Fascinating. So they can't have any foreign food.
Exactly. Well, no Western.
No Western food. And then we'll set it on fire.
Exactly. They'll just burn it, and then it's even more delicious because everyone knows you burn cheese and ham, you have a croque madame.
Delish.
This has led to a surge in local production. State statistics show that cheese production has increased by 30% in the first 4 months of 2014. But savvy Russians have reported, that pizza made with local cheese doesn't taste the same, right? Like yak cheese on pizza, not as good.
Yak cheese? I think they have cows in Russia.
Yak cheese. Very sour.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I got a bunch of tiny snippets about different cheese crimes throughout history. So here are three that I thought were the funniest. This is the case of the cheese bandits.
Yes.
In 1928, the infamous cheese bandits were busted in Brooklyn after confessing to 25 robberies in a 2-month period. They earned the title not because they stole cheese, because they frequently ate cheese while robbing delis. So they're like, this is a robbery. Give us all your money and a bunch of slices of cheddar while we're waiting for the money.
Yeah. Give me all of your boar's head.
For all their thieving and cheese eating, the three cheese bandits were eventually caught and a bail set at $100,000, which in today's dollars would be $1.5 $5 million.
What? That's insane.
I know. That's really high bail. And then this is interesting and kind of relates to the St. Valentine's Day massacre a bit last week, which, by the way, I watched The Untouchables after the episode because I wanted to – I hadn't watched it in a couple of years. And what a great movie. What a
I need to watch that.
Amazing film. Kevin Costner, so hot, but portrays Elliot Ness to be a bit of a little bitch, honestly, which maybe he was. But also
– maybe he was.
He becomes much cooler as the movie unfolds. But I digress. The big cheese. During the Prohibition era of the 1920s and 30s, Al Capone reigned as a fearsome mobster and, quote, businessman. One of his many tactics was to pressure pizzerias into buying cheese from farms that he owned in Wisconsin.
Nice.
It was alleged that if a pizzeria denied this offer, he would set it on fire. There was also a rumor that his cheesy competition went up in flames to bolster demand for his dairy products. I just, like, one thing that I really love about mafia from, like, this particular time in history, especially, is, like, they'll just do anything. They're like, man, I'm getting in the cheese game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing dairy now. Okay, Al.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's like, I gotta have my little fingers in everything.
Exactly, my little stubby fingers. But that's kind of some of the most interesting cheese crime. And then I wanted to start off with a joke, but honestly, and this is not meant to be a pun, all of the jokes about cheese are fucking cheesy, but not in a good way. They're so dumb, I can't even read them. And that really, like, takes a lot for me because, you know, I love a dumb joke. But, yeah, there's not many good cheese jokes out there. Folks, if you have a good one, please call into the show. Nicole, should we do our top three favorite cheese or things with cheese?
Yes.
Okay, you go first.
Well, it just occurred to me that we should call the episode The Cheese Stands Alone.
Oh, great.
That's
of course we should.
That's a great and confusing line in The Farmer and the Dell, another wonderful nursery rhyme song.
That's true. What? How did the cheese get involved, right? It's a bunch of animals.
Well, I was trying to quickly look it up. So, yeah, the cheese stands alone because I don't know why, but it has a German origin, so maybe it's just like a miss, you know, it was translated wrong.
Das cheese stands alone. It's making fun of all different cultures today.
Yeah.
But they're all white, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's totally, totally fine. Other favorite cheeses. I really like Velveeta cheese. It's good. I'm sorry to say.
Even Don't be
it's
sorry.
An unregulated, shelf-stable cheese product.
That's fine.
Yeah, and also great for nachos, you know, because you don't have to make a roux. It just melts.
Perfect.
It's right, RTG. And because it's so melty, you can actually throw other cheese in there, and mm-hmm. they become one, and that you don't have to worry about it separating. And I appreciate 100%. That.
I always put American cheese in my queso. I would never.
It's simply ridiculous if you don't. Although I do remember one time going over to someone's house, and they were making queso by just putting a huge chunk of shredded cheddar in a saucepan, and of course it went badly.
That's what they did? Just cheddar melted as queso?
Well, it didn't even work, obviously. It got greasy, separated, and, you know.
What? How weird.
It's ridiculous. And I also like cheddar. I like to have cheese and crackers is a favorite meal of mine. A cheese cracker, if you will. Also, I like boursin. Sorry, I gotta throw it in there.
Oof, I love boursin. Boursin is delicious. I'm going to say I think my favorite things that, like, are with – some things that I like that are with cheese.
Okay.
Okay, I really don't care. I love, like, fake cheese-flavored things. Like, I love cheddar-flavored potato chips. I like cheese doodles. I like nacho flavored Doritos. I like fake cheese-flavored things. Fake cheese is good for me.
Totally. Nacho Doritos are the best.
Amazing. I love a tuna melt.
Yes, very good.
And I love a grilled cheese sandwich. Although, like, I don't ever have a grilled cheese sandwich. Like, I can't remember the last time I had one. But I do really like a grilled cheese sandwich. And I will
made
go...
myself one the other day. I had
you
tomato
did?
Soup. Yeah.
Oh, that
and I had a little cheese toasty, as they say in England.
And when it comes to grilled cheese, I like a fancy grilled cheese with all kinds of fancy grilled cheese on sourdough. And I like the most bare bones, like an American cheese and white bread grilled cheese. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Like
I made mine with
any kind.
I made mine with little cracker cut cheddar slices because that's all I had. But it worked just fine. And then I also put honey mustard on it. And I don't usually make mine with mayonnaise, but I tried it with QP mayonnaise and it was really good.
That sounds great. And I think like my favorite thing with cheese is a quesadilla. Again, yeah. I like a shitty quesadilla that has like, you know, shredded bag cheese, or like a really nice quesadilla with like queso fresco in it. Like any kind of quesadilla for me is delicious. I love a quesadilla.
There's a place in Crown Heights or Prospect Heights. I don't know. It's called Maya Taqueria, and they have a really great quesadilla that has rice and beans inside of it. And it's so delicious and fattening, but really you just take it handheld, dip it in some salsa verde, and having yourself a great time.
That sounds so good. All right, you little cheesy cheese heads. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Cheesy gordita crunch.
You little double-decker taco cheesy gordita crunches. Love you guys. Mean it. And hasta la cheesy pasta.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Life's a Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.